Hey everyone, it's Julie Cully with Murders and History in Texas. Sorry I'm a little late, lots of things going on, but let's get started on my next story. It's pretty gross. Floyd Newton Byrne, Rosa Shearer, and Myra Peggy, and Clara Jernigan's chauffeur kills and dismembers three women in San Angelo. As I've been writing this book, I've often wondered what causes a person to suddenly crack and kill someone without actually knowing what they are doing at the time. What are they thinking when they do it? How are they feeling? Do they feel remorse later? Or their minds so fried at the time of their crime that there's no hope of them ever getting better? I mean, how could a person actually kill someone without ever giving it a second thought? And how could they perform horrific acts on a body, such as stabbing them multiple times or dumping them or moving them around after a person is dead? This next story is almost unfathomable to most of us. I get the vision of a man standing over a body and just hacking and hacking and hacking with no voluntary control to stop. Floyd Newton Byrne had been hired by Wilbert Jurgens of San Angelo to drive his wife, Clara, and daughter Myrna around town and do odd jobs around the house. Clara's mother, Rosa Shearer, had been visiting from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, since December of 1927. Wilbert was often gone weeks at a time to Texon, Texas, for his job with the Big Lake Oil Company. He felt safe knowing a man was around his house to take care of whatever might come up while he was gone. He was only able to spend about 2 days every 2 weeks with his family. On March 3, 1928, Byrne got into an argument with Clara Jurgens about a check he had forged and cashed. Evidently, the argument became heated and Newton Byrne went crazy. He punched Miss Jurgens in the face, then he picked up a hatchet and began hacking her to death. He turned around when he heard a scream and saw 12-year-old Peggy Jurgens. He went towards her with the hatchet and began hacking her to death also. Finally, he finished off Rosa Shearer by hacking at her until she was dead on the floor. But he didn't stop there. He kept on and on with the three women. And when it was finally over, he had disemboweled little Peggy and had impaled her body on the bedpost. What was he thinking at the time? He lifted her little body up on the bedpost and hung her there like a decoration. He had also hacked Clara so much that she too had been disemboweled. Clara, her mother and daughter had been mutilated almost beyond recognition. Newton Byrne cleaned himself up and locked up the house and left. He got in the Jurgens family car and he went to a hotel in San Angelo with the girl and stayed drunk that night and all through the next day. 2 days later, he went back to the Jurgens home and ransacked it to make it look like a stranger had broke in to rob the place. He threw furniture and belongings around and found $40 hidden away, which he took. But before he left, something in his brain clicked. Did he have remorse? Could it be that he was really sorry for what he did? Newton Byrne took the time to cover the bodies up before he left the house. He then drove a little ways out of town and dumped the family car. Not having any place to go, he went to Sulphur Springs and asked if he could stay at the home of Mr. and Mrs. J.W. Lindsay. The Lindsays were friends of the Jurgens. On March 11th, 8 days after the murder, Drew W. Christner, The Jergens' next-door neighbor on Concho Street became concerned when he hadn't seen any movement of any kind at his neighbor's house for days. He finally decided to call the police. When they arrived, they were unable to gain entrance in the house. All of the doors had been locked. Finally, they got in through a rear door and discovered the decomposing bodies. The conditions of the bodies in the blood-spattered house were indescribable. They found the axe and a bloody knife and ice pick. An all-out search was started for Byrne. A call came in to the Lindsay home telling them what happened to their dear friends. They told the police that Byrne was staying with them. Police went to their home in Sulphur Springs and arrested him. On the way back from Sulphur Springs to Fort Worth, where Sheriff Bob Hewitt was taking him for safekeeping, Byrne asked if he would just drive him to Huntsville to the electric chair. Of course, Hewitt couldn't do that. The law didn't work that way, so he took him to the city jail. When he got to the jail, he asked for cigarettes and something to read. While talking to reporters, he says, "I don't know why I did it. These people had befriended me, had been more to me than my own folks. They were the best friends I ever had. But that blood," and the young killer shuddered. During his confession, he admitted to killing the three women, but he didn't remember anything about the mutilation or a knife or an ice pick. Byrne was described as barely over 5 feet tall, blonde hair with gray eyes. It was the eyes that made him so different. Rarely did you see a man with that shade of gray eyes. During the 4 years Byrne had worked for the Jergens, he had from time to time stolen checks and cashed them. But the family always forgave him for what he did. The night of the murder, he came home and told Mrs. Jergens he had once again stolen a check and cashed it for $20. But this night, she became furious and began cussing at him. He said no woman had ever cussed him before, and it was because of his anger he hit her with his fist. In one breath, he said he didn't remember what happened after that night. But in the other breath, he said she screamed, which woke her little girl up. When little Peggy came into the room, he struck her about the head with the hatchet. Then the grandmother woke up and he said, "Let her have it too." When Wilbert Jergens was notified of the death of his family, he immediately said that he wanted Byrne brought back to San Angelo and be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. He said that he had always treated Byrne like a member of the family. When the family went to San Angelo from San Antonio 4 years ago, they brought Byrne with them. Miss Faye Mercer, a waitress at a cafe where Byrne spent a lot of time, thought Byrne had actually planned the murder in detail. He told her a few weeks ago before the murder that some of these days I'm going to be known all over the United States and probably other parts of the world. William Edward Hickman would have nothing on Newton Byrne. Hickman was the killer responsible for the kidnapping, dismembering, and murder of Marion Parker, a 12-year-old Los Angeles girl, on December 15, 1927. Another gory story there. With no one to sit by his side and comfort him, the Byrne trial began March 28, 1928. The only word he received from family was from his sister, Lou, from Birmingham, Alabama. She sent a message to her brother that read, "Dear buddy, I'm sorry to know that you were in such trouble. Write and tell me all about it. I'll write you a letter and send some money. Mother and Lou still love you, darling. I will come if I can." En route to the courthouse, 5 armed officers rode in the car with Byrne. Another police car filled with police officers rode behind him. The car Byrne was riding in was flanked on all sides by motorcycle police officers. While sitting in the courtroom, Byrne chained, smoked, and of course, you could smoke back then anywhere you went, and he never took his eyes off the floor. A copy of Burns' confession was read in court, leaving most of the goriest details out. The prosecution was only allowed to read the part of the confession pertaining to the death of little Peggy Jurgens because Byrne was being tried only for her murder. He would be tried at a later date in the death of the other two women if needed. The defense called Carl Busby to the stand. Busby was a friend of Byrne, one of the very few he had. He said the relationship over the years between Byrne and the Jurgens' daughter Peggy was that of brother and sister. He said that Byrne was always treated as a member of the family, and he had never known of any friction between him and the Jurgens. Dr. H.D. Ruth, who had done the autopsy on the body of Peggy, said that two wounds to her head alone would have caused her death. On March 29th, a very quick verdict of death was given to Floyd Newton Byrne for the murder of Peggy Jurgens. He was taken back to jail where he spent the morning playing dice and losing constantly, but he said he was the happiest he had been since he arrived in jail. He told reporters, "I do not fear death. I can stand it as well as any man. I was not much surprised at the verdict. It hurt me at first, but when it was read the second time, that it seemed I was relieved of some great burden, and I left the courtroom laughing like a fool. I just couldn't help it. I'm livelier today than I've ever been since I was arrested. It is not a big consolation, too, and I didn't ask for mercy. Of course, I hoped I wouldn't get the chair, but I didn't even know if I couldn't have had a change of venue. As long as there is life, there is hope." And with that, he turned back to playing his game of dice. 2 days later, after Byrne had time to think in his jail cell, he decided to ask for a new trial. He said he needed the extra time to make it right with God. He also wanted to have time to write his autobiography. On April 7th, while waiting for a decision from the Court of Criminal Appeals, Byrne received flowers from a secret admirer for Easter. A local florist received a letter mailed from somewhere between Altus, Oklahoma, and San Angelo. In the letter was $2 and a note that directed the florist to send some tulips to the confessed hatchet killer to his cell in the county jail. Byrne received them, but he threw them in the trash. Byrne's appeal was denied, and his death sentence was upheld. He was taken to prison to await his execution on April 14th. On January 11th, 1929, Newton Byrne was electrocuted. As he made the walk from his cell to the room where old Sparky was waiting for him, he said, "I have nothing against anybody, and I hope nobody has anything against me." As he was strapped into the chair, he called out, "Goodbye," and said, "Tell my mother my last thought was of her." He kissed a crucifix that he wore around his neck, and 8 minutes later, he was dead. Well, that's it for this month. I hope you enjoyed the story, or at least it intrigued you. I want to wish everybody happy Thanksgiving, and I will see you next month. Thanks for listening. Bye.